It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Finland is consistently ranked as the happiest country in the world. We explore why the United States, one of the wealthiest nations, fails to measure up in an annual comparison of well-being. And you can join the conversation about the World Happiness Report, your thoughts on happiness here in Wisconsin. Call in with a question. You can share comments at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Christine Whelan is a professor of consumer science at UW-Madison School of Human Ecology. Christine, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Good morning. So America ranks 23rd in the world in this latest report. That's an 8-point drop from last year. What could be contributing to Americans' lower happiness?
Well, certainly we are hearing a lot about increases in loneliness, increases in felt sense of inequality in the United States. And so certainly all of these are contributing to a general cultural narrative that we've got right now that things are not so great and we are not so happy. But I do believe that some of these results need to be taken with a grain of salt, because this ranking is really based on one question in the World Happiness Report, and very small differences in actual scores can make huge differences in terms of those national rankings. So while we have fallen a great deal in 1 year, I expect to see some fluctuation over the coming years.
And that's interesting, because from a research perspective, I wonder what you think of their ladder approach. Think of your life as a ladder, a scale of, 10 to 0. What do you make of that type of way to relate happiness to kind of a ladder?
So Gallup and the World Happiness Report uses this Cantrell ladder. Mm-hmm. And this ladder is a one-question survey where you actually are shown a visual of a ladder with 10 rungs on it. And the idea is for you to sort of situate yourself on this ladder, where the bottom is the worst possible life and the top is the best possible life. And so as I always explain this to my students, and I encourage everybody who's listening to kind of imagine this themselves, where would you put yourself on this ladder? What rung would you put yourself at from 0 to 10, with 10 being the highest? And, it turns out that what this question is really asking is determined by the sort of set of beliefs that you bring into it. So if you are looking at this ladder, perhaps you are thinking about it in terms of social comparison. Do I have as much money as other people? Do I have as much fun as other people? And social comparison is actually, research finds time and again, the enemy of happiness. Hmm. So some researchers are wondering about this question, but it turns out that most Americans put themselves somewhere between a sort of 7 and an 8 on this ladder. And worldwide, you see similar numbers as well.
And I would imagine, too, that social comparison and social media have a lot in common, that you can't, it's hard to avoid, what people are showing and telling on social media about their lives, and then you yourself comparing yourself to that. Is that an issue?
It absolutely is. So the more that we see the idealized versions of other people, the very stylized versions of celebrity success, then the more we tend to feel that we are failing or lower down on that Cantrell ladder. Interestingly enough, the Nordic countries that always score very high on these scales have a somewhat different definition of happiness than we do. So in Finland, when people think about happiness and success, they think about having enough. And they define their well-being based on, do I feel like I generally have enough? Whereas in the United States, when we think about happiness and success and well-being, we think about as more. Do I have everything that I want? And one of the things that we know is that the wanting mind also is never satisfied. Hmm. So that can have us have lower rankings on these scales as well.
We're talking about happiness with Christine Whelan, professor of consumer science at UW-Madison. And you can join the conversation with your thoughts. Call in with a question, and you can share your ideas at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Christine, since 2021, as you mentioned, Finland consistently ranking as the happiest country in the world. And last April, we talked with happiness coach Paula Ima of the Finnish Happiness Research Association about why citizens are so happy.
Finland is a welfare state. We have democratic institutions. We trust each other. We have low corruption rates. So kind of like the elements for happiness and the nation having the systems and structures to support the happiness of its citizens, they are in place, yes.
It sounds like she's saying that they have the scaffolding of happiness. What are your thoughts?
Certainly, when you think about happiness in the as a group happiness, thinking about it in somewhat of a collective sense, where my happiness is really related to your happiness, then having these robust social structures very much helps. When you think of happiness, though, in the individual sense, then whether or not the group is doing well may not be as important to you. So certainly not only are the social structures and the scaffolding important, but the stories that we tell ourselves about what the good life looks like. The more we focus on purpose and meaning and pro-social behavior and think about others, the research shows that that does tend to make us happier. The more we focus on our own success and our own individual happiness and pleasure, well, that tends to be more elusive. So in Finland, I think, you know, in these Nordic countries, they have a narrative of group success. I think we're seeing that in the studies as well.
There was an interesting turn of events in this report saying Americans age 60 and older rank 50 places higher in happiness than people under 30. Why could that be?
This is an incredibly serious turn of events, I think. And it's good that we are starting a national conversation about it. Young people are really unhappy. They are posting sort of loss of meaning. They are feeling more socially isolated and they are more lonely. Many people are concerned that this is because instead of turning outward toward relationships, they are turning inward and looking at screens. And the more that we isolate ourselves, the less happy we are. Humans are social animals. So there's a lot of really compelling research that is suggesting we need to change the way that we are structuring childhood and the opportunities that we are offering to the young to actually engage in life. This may be a real wake-up call, and it's certainly in keeping with some of the other data that our young people are struggling.
And what I found interesting is the drop isn't unique to the U.S. It's happening elsewhere in the world. And as a professor, you interact with young adults a lot. Do you have insights there about why it might be spreading beyond of, you know, just a situation in the United States?
If we're talking about screens and mobile phone usage, social media usage, that is something we're seeing worldwide. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of loneliness and isolation is occurring to all young people who are increasingly spending 5, 6, 7, even 11 hours a day of almost all their waking time on screens. So this is something we see. And you know, with my college students, I have a little bit of hope because many of my students are telling me that they're putting their phones on do not disturb. They are increasingly trying to take charge of their digital lives, recognizing that it is not mentally helpful for them. So perhaps this also will be the generation that turns things around.
Christine Whelan, a professor of consumer science at UW-Madison with takeaways on the state of happiness in the world and here in Wisconsin communities. Call in with a question. You can share your perspective at any point, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Nordic countries like Finland and Denmark, they consistently rank among the world's happiest. The United States, it tumbles 8 spots in the latest World Happiness Report, and we examine what could be causing the glum outlook, and we can hear your thoughts along the way. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Christine Whelan is a professor of consumer science in the School of Human Ecology at UW-Madison. Christine, in a Gallup poll last year, the poll found roughly 44 million American adults experience significant loneliness. How does loneliness factor into a person's happiness?
The single biggest predictor of somebody's happiness and well-being throughout life, according to dozens and dozens of longitudinal research surveys, is the quality of your relationships. Loneliness really is the antithesis of happiness and thriving. So as we see more and more loneliness in our country and really throughout the world, what we are seeing is a decrease in well-being, a decrease in the amount of time that people are spending face-to-face in relationship with others. And so that actually really is the takeaway that I think we all should have out of this survey, not comparison in terms of other countries and social comparison to others, but rather thinking about how we can bolster our relationships and really strengthen those quality interactions that bring us the most joy.
What are some practical tips on how to reduce loneliness?
Check in with your friends, pick up the phone, and make a date to see folks face to face. So sending a text message is fine for planning, but is not really going to reduce the loneliness that we see and feel. So really getting off of our screens, getting face-to-face, and coming together. Social action, coming together around causes and ideas that you care about, that you are working side-by-side with others to make a difference. Pro-social behavior, doing nice things for other people, doing things with other people. Anytime we come together, just yesterday, for example, as we all looked up at the skies for the solar eclipse, well, that was a moment of awe and unity. And my bet is that a lot of people felt a little bit less lonely when they saw so many others shoulder to shoulder looking up.
Oh, that's interesting. Let's bring in Chris in Two Rivers with observations. Chris, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I've traveled to Finland quite a few times for business and have friends there and in Sweden and Denmark. And I would say that the people there don't, you know, going to the country, don't seem to think that they're any more bubbly or overtly happy than we are in the United States. But one thing I notice in particular in those countries is that there isn't as much worry. You know, people don't have to worry about, well, am I going to be able to pay for healthcare if I have a tragic accident within my family. And they also try to spend time with friends and family, like the sauna situation in Finland, which is great, getting together once a week with the family or friends and getting outdoors and enjoying nature, whether it's in the middle of winter or in the summertime. I think those things really contribute.
Chris, I appreciate you calling in and with that perspective of traveling to Finland and having friends in Nordic countries. Christine, what stands out to you?
Absolutely. Those are two really excellent points. So certainly the lack of anxiety about what's going to happen in the worst case scenarios, this is where social services and a safety net can really alleviate people's fears for the future. So that's one very good point. And yes, a culture that encourages people to come together. A couple decades ago, Robert Putnam, a famous sociologist, wrote a book called Bowling Alone about how the United States used to have more groups where people would come together and fewer people are joining in community. So certainly if the Nordic countries are doing more of that than we are, that is a big contributor to happiness.
Let's bring in Sherry now in Madison. Sherry, what are your thoughts?
Hi, I really appreciate this. I would say that one of the factors in terms of happiness is the country you live in. So if, you know, in the United States with guns and climate change and incivility like we've had, I think that makes a difference. My question, though, is about young people, and whether it's the screen, whether it's the screen so much or also the sense of eco-anxiety because of climate change affecting their future?
Oh, Sherry, thank you. That's a great question. Christine.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, I think that it is certainly true that that climate change, that structural issues are affecting people. And then also the idea of, are we going to have to be the ones to save the world? Are we the ones have to be the individuals who are doing all of this ourselves? So certainly all of these factors really come into play.
Talking about the World Happiness Report with Christine Whelan, Professor of Consumer Science at UW-Madison. Christine, you teach a course on consuming happiness at UW-Madison. I'm wondering if we could audit the course for just a bit. What might we learn?
Absolutely. So in the course, I talk about how we try to buy happiness successfully and unsuccessfully in the market economy. And one of the things that we talk about is while certainly having more money can allow you to use your resources to maximize your well-being, unless you're spending in keeping with your values, then more money does not buy more happiness. So I talk about spending on experiences rather than things, on spending on pro-social behavior, and really thinking about what matters to you and why it matters before thinking about trying to buy a quick fix wellness solution. Those are some of the things we're talking about this semester.
I wonder what comes up in your group discussions when you make these recommendations.
Well, certainly young people are saying that they are bombarded with quick fix solutions. The wellness programs that we're seeing are just everywhere out there. And we're seeing so much social media selling them something like a bath salts or something to be happier. But really, they are looking for larger answers, and they are very well aware of the mental health crises and the sort of sense of loneliness and isolation that they face. I have real hope for this generation. I begin to see the tide turning, and I think these are the kids that are going to say, enough is enough already. We want to make some change.
Let's go to Mark in Milwaukee. Mark, go ahead.
Thank you, Kate. I just want to say that your morning show is one of the things that makes me happy.
Oh,
and
thank you.
Really, your part. I'm wondering if your guest has any perspective on whether we can learn something from the ancient Greek philosophers like Aristotle, who described happiness as a form of activity rather than a state of mind where we measure how much we've amassed, rather the activity of our seeking our potential and what is within our power rather than what is external.
Mark, thank you. Christine.
Oh, Mark, your question just made me so happy because I, in fact, teach Aristotle and his Nicomachean Ethics as the beginning of my course. So Aristotle talks about two different types of happiness. He talks about hedonic happiness, which is about pleasure, and eudaimonic happiness, which is about a sort of purpose and meaning-driven sort of sense of happiness that really is focused on relationships and, yes, on doing things that are meaningful to you. So when I talk about purposeful life, purpose is really a verb, not a noun. And happiness is definitely something that is a byproduct of living a life of purpose. So it's not about something that you get or buy at a store. Really, yes, it is an action and it is a choice that we can all make day in and day out. Now, that has a lot of opportunity for many of us, but it also puts pressure on us if we are feeling anxious, that it's all up to us and that we need to do it all on our own. That's not true either. So thinking about making the choice in community with others and in relationship with others about things you care about, yes, Aristotle has and so many of the ancient philosophers have said some really important things. So, yes, thanks for bringing Aristotle up this morning.
In closing, though, on the flip side of that, putting a dollar amount on it, there was a study found happiness levels among households making over $123,000 a year largely stayed the same when given more money. So what do you make there of a money threshold for happiness?
Yeah, so this was called the Easterlin paradox, and it was coined back in the 1970s that up to a certain point, more money does buy happiness, but in the end of the day, more money does not buy happiness in grand quantities. I think what that means is that as we want more, as we have more, we want more, and just spending on money on things is not going to make us happy. However, other research did find that you can use your money to maximize your well-being if you spend it right. So my advice to everyone is to spend on relationships rather than things, and to spend on others, on causes you care about. And in that case, more money can buy you more happiness if you spend it wisely.
Christine, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It was great to have this conversation this morning.
Appreciate it. Christine Whelan is a professor of consumer science in the School of Human Ecology at UW-Madison. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.